Okay, we're going to start here on the top of Chaf Gimel and Aleph by the two dots. I mentioned yesterday that we'd come back and take a quick look at some of the sugya that we ended off with yesterday, which is by Nashim Chayavot, B'ner Chanukah, She'afein Hayu Ba'oto Anes. The women are also included in Ner Chanukah because Afein Hayu Ba'oto Anes. We discussed yesterday what that means, the Machloket and the Rishonim. What's interesting here is, what are the implications for the Halacha when we do that? And it's going to feed into the next sugya. The next sugya is the sugya of Achsanai, is a guest in someone else's house. What does he do with Nerot Chanukah? As well as other items that we're going to see on today's daf, the brachot, are all going to derive from the same basic question, which is, when we say that a woman is chayevet in Nerot Chanukah, what does that mean in the context of the halachot that we practice? So for instance, if you're only lighting one Ner for the household, Ner Isha Beito, then obviously there's no relevance to that, because no matter how many people are in the house, whether there's a whole family, whether there's just a husband and wife, you're just going to light one anyway. If you light based on the number of the members of the household, it would seem that the woman would be included as one of those numbered or enumerated in the household. If you light based on the number of household times the number of nights, that also seems to be pretty straightforward. The question really arises with Minhag Ashkenaz, which is where everybody lights their own Chanukiah. So an instance where everyone lights their own Chanukiah, where does the woman fall in that perspective? Can the woman light her own Chanukiah? Or do we say Ishto Kegufo? And in Ishto Kegufo, she has lit along with her husband. They are considered to be a single unit. And in being a single unit, she cannot light independently of her husband. And the memra here of Afeinu Ba'oto Anes is an instance when her husband's not around, or where her husband's not lighting, then she would be required or obligated to light. So I know that Rav Willig believes that if a husband lights, that a wife may not light independently, and that it's a bracha levatala for a wife to light independently of her husband because of Ishto Kegufo, which is brought down in Halacha in Nerot Chanukah in both directions, which is that if a husband lights for his wife or a wife lights for the husband, then the other one may not light with a bracha. On the other hand, the Mishnah Berurah brings down in the Bir Halacha, and Rosh Shlomo Zalman also brings it in his Tshuvot, that a woman, if she wants to, can make a bracha here like any other mitzvah that says she has man grama. So all of them ask, what do you mean, like any other mitzvah that says she has man grama? Mitzvah says she has man grama, the woman has no chiyuv, she decides to opt in, and therefore she makes a bracha. But when it comes to Nerot Chanukah, the Mahajan min Mahajan really says that every individual is independently chayav. And so why should the woman be any different than any other member of the household? So both of them say that the Havami would have been Ishto Kegufo. That's the Havami. The Havami here is that the woman cannot create an independent chiyuv over here because of Ishto Kegufo. And because of that, we would have thought that she can't light independently. Kamash Malon, that she can light independently. And so they both conclude that a woman can light, even when her husband is lighting, and she can make her own bracha on those neirot, mitoch, mehajim, and mehajim, and obligate herself like she would do in their mitzvah tasei she'as man grama. There we have a machloket in the Achronim as to whether a woman can independently light in the face of her husband lighting. But that also has implications more so on the remainder of the Gemara, is how do we look at the chiyuv of Nerot Chanukah? We say that there is an obligation to light Nerot Chanukah. What exactly is the nature of that obligation? There's two possibilities of what the nature of that obligation is. One is that it's a chovra gavra, that the individual is chayav to light Nerot Chanukah. The other possibility is that it's chovat adar. It has to do with the bayit. It's a chovat bayit. It has to do with the house. The house is what generates the chiyuv. Someone, anybody who lights in the house can discharge that obligation. What we'll see today in the Gemara, and I'll point it out in different places, is that it's not clear. There's sometimes it feels like a chovat gavra. It's sometimes that it feels like a chovat hadar, chovat bayit. And so we have to try to come up with some way to reconcile between those and explain Nerot Chanukah. One of those questions will obviously arise with the woman lighting in the face of her husband. What does that mean? Is there a chovat gavra? Does she have an independent chiyuv? Or is she captured under the chiyuv of the bayit? And since the husband represents the bayit, so she can't separate herself out from her husband. Even though the minhag Ashkenaz, the mahajir minhajir, is that everybody lights independently, maybe a woman doesn't have enough independent identity to do that. And that's what we just discussed here, about how they are captured by their husband's lighting. So now the Gemara continues, Amar of Sheshet, Achsanai chayav ner Chanukah. A guest has to light Nerot Chanukah. Amar of Zera, Mareish kavina bei rav, mishtatfana beprite. Originally, when I was a young bacher, and I used to live by someone, I was boarding by someone to learn by the Beis Medrash, I used to make sure that I gave over money, b'hadayush pizza, to the host or the hostess, whoever I was staying by. I used to pay them some money to be mitzarev, to join in their hadlakat neirot Chanukah. But in nesiveitita, after I got married, amina hashtavad yalo tzirichna, I don't need to do this anymore. The kamadlichi alai to go beitai, because they're lighting for me in my house. So here you have some of that tension that we saw before. Originally, when he wasn't married, we said, okay, he has to light when he's at the guest house. When he's with the host or hostess, he's got to light. What's the obligation there? There it sounds like the obligation is chovat agavra. The individual is obligated to light. And since he's in someone else's house, in order to discharge that obligation, he'll have to join in or give them some money to be a part of their hadlakat neirot, to discharge his obligation. If you really believe that it was chovat hadar or chovat habayit, why would he have to do anything? He's staying in their house. That house they're lighting in. He shouldn't have to participate at all. So the fact is, there it sounds like it's a chovat agavra. The individual himself is obligated to do it. On the other hand, once he got married, he said, I'm not going to light anymore because my wife's lighting for me in the house. Well, that makes it sound like there is no obligation on the individual. It sounds like that's chovat habayit. And the fact that his wife is lighting in the house discharges his obligation of chovat habayit. Now, the halacha, it's very interesting what happens here. First of all, in terms of achsanai, if he has a separate entrance, then he does light by himself, makes his bracha. He has to do it totally separately because of the same chashash or chashad that we've seen before, which is that when there are multiple doorways, and we're going to see it again today, that the possibility is that people think that somebody didn't light, or somebody's living there and they didn't light. So there is an obligation to light. If you have a separate entrance, a separate location, then you would light by yourself. On the other hand, if you're a part of the household of the host or hostess, you're sleeping over there, you're eating by them, we don't have any separate quarters and living space, then you would join in with the host and hostess, and you'd pay to be a part of their lighting. Now, in terms of lighting at home, when the woman lights back in the house, what does that do to the husband? Once she is lit back at home, can the husband light separately? The same question we had before with the husband lit, can the wife now light? Now we're in the opposite scenario. The wife is lit in the house. Can the husband light? It's machloket. The Taz brings down the machloket. There are those that say you may not make a bracha. It's a bracha levatala now for the husband to make a bracha because he cannot identify himself separately because they lit for him back in the house. And when his wife lights in the house, he's done with his obligation. He may not light separately at this point in time in terms of a bracha. And obviously he can light, he just can't make a bracha on it. There are others that believe that you could make a bracha because mahadrin min mahadrin. How is this any different? They lit in the house, he wants to light over here. Why can't you make a bracha? So the halacha, because of that safek, because of that issue, we always recommend that a person not make a bracha when they are a guest and they're lighting for him in the other location. He should not make a bracha. He should try to hear the brachot from someone else, from the balabait that's there, and that way he won't have that problem. Or the other options that are given, but these are not lechatchila, these are kind of bidyevit types of suggestions. One is to opt out, to specifically state that he's opting out of the lighting in his house. The question is whether he can really do that. Does he really have the ability to opt out and say, I'm not a part of it, when it sounds like from here, and we mentioned this before, that it's a chovat habayit. Once they light for him, how does he have the ability to opt out of it? It's not really his choice. But there is one suggestion is to opt out, and therefore he can make it separately with the bracha. The other option is to light prior to the time that they light in the house. If he lights prior to the time that they light in the house, then obviously his obligation has not been discharged yet. Even though later in the day they will discharge his obligation, nevertheless, since they have yet to do it, that maybe he can make a separate bracha. Rosh Shlomo Zalman talks about that fact. What happens if you are in a different country, and they are lighting for you, for instance, you're in the houses in Eretz Yisrael and you're traveling to America. So now when they light in your house in America, it's still Erev Chanukah. It's not even time that you could light. Are you Yotze with that obligation? Rav Shlomo Zalman says yes. That even in that scenario, you are Yotze because at the time that your household was lighting, that was the Zman of Chanukah, and then you're Yotze with that and you could not make the bracha later. But you see this tension again playing out, this tension between Chovat HaGavra and the Chovat HaBayit, about whether you can create independent identities separate from the house and the household. Right. I mean, I obviously have to say that the chovat agavra is that there be candles lit in this location. The chovat agavra isn't necessarily to light candles, it's to make sure that there are candles lit in this location. That's how you'd have to phrase it. Now, the Gemara continues. Now, we jump over back to a little bit about the oils, which is Amar Rabbi Shu ben Levi. All oils are good for candles. And Shemen Zayit is the best. Amar Abaye, Miresh, Ava Mahadar, Mar Amishcha, Dishum Shimei. In the beginning, I used to, either I or when he refers to Mar, it's usually Rabbi Bar Nachmani, says Rabbi, used to make sure to get this sesame seed oil. So Amar, hi, Mashach Nori Tvei. Rashi describes here, Mashach Nori Tvei is, Enu Memaher Lechalot Kishemen Zayit. It blows through the wick in a nice manner so it doesn't burn down, it'll last longer. Came into Shamallah Ha, the Rabbi Shul Ben Levi. After he heard what Rabbi Shimon Levi says, Mahadar Amishcha de Zeita, that we make sure to use olive oil. Amar Hait Salil Nehure Tvei. That gives a better light. So whereas the Shemishcha de Shumshe pulls into the wick nicely, but when we're talking about getting a clear, burning, nice light, that comes from Shemen Zayit. Now what's interesting here is what candles are we speaking about over here? When we say that all the Shemanim, are we talking about Neirot Chanukah? Are we talking about Neirot Shabbat? So if you look in Tosafot, says Mereisha v'Hadar Mar Amishcha Deshum Shemei Nireh Da Aner Chanukah Kai. It's talking about Aner Chanukah. Meshum Taim De Mesik Na Fish Nehore Tvei. Because he concludes that it has a better light, and that's what's important on Chanukah. Aval Aner Shabbat Pshita Deshem Zayim Min Mufchar Vishnim Shachar Btila Tvei Mikulu. He says that it draws up the wick better than anything else. And everybody agrees that you can use Shemen Zayit. So Tosa says it's a given that Shemen Zayit is better for Shabbat. And there was no question because of the pulling on the wick. But over here it seems to be that the Gemara is making that distinction between Shemen Shum Shemei, which is Mashach Nohore Tvei, that it, Rashi describes here, Mashach Nohore Tvei is Enu Memaher Lechalot Shemen Zayit. It blows through the wick in a nice manner so it doesn't burn down, it'll last longer, versus the clear burning of the Shemen Zayit. So if here you have a choice between, does it take longer, you can have the light last longer, or a Shemen Zayit, which is a clear flame. So Tosafot says, that's Shemen Nerut Chanukah. That's his decision. Should it last longer or should it be more light? In the end, he decides that more light is important. But by Shabbat, the most important thing is that it moves through the wick smoothly, and that Shemen Zayit is the king. And therefore, there's no question by Neirot Shabbat. Obviously, you could argue that the whole Gemara here is speaking about Neirot Shabbat and nothing to do with Neirot Chanukah at all. And the same discussion. If it lasts longer on Friday night, it's better for you because then you won't have to move around, move the wick, do anything. Whereas if you're light, also maybe that gives the advantage. You're not going to have to be Shemei Yateh. So you could argue against the position of Tosafot, but just know that that is in general a problem throughout these sugyot here. The Gemara is jumping back and forth with Shabbat and Chanukah. It's not clear a lot of times whether they're discussing a din in Shabbat or they're discussing a din in Chanukah. So now we have another member from Shub and Levi, nothing to do with Neirot at all, which is Kol Shmanim Yafim L'Dio. All oils are good for making ink. V'Shem Zayit Min HaMufkar. Shem Zayit is the best. When we say Shemen Zayit is good for making the ink, the gavel, is that to mix it, to knead it? Oh, lashen, to smoke it. Now, smoking it, as Rashi describes over here, he says that they used to light a fire underneath a glass utensil. You could do this, you know, when you have a candle. If you put anything above the candle, any glass utensil above the candle, it darkens, it becomes blackened from the ash that comes up from the flame. So what you do is you put that glass utensil there, you get the black on it, then you scrape that off afterwards, that black ash, you scrape it off afterwards. Then Rashi says you mix it also with Shemen Zayit, you mix it together with Shemen Zayit, and that's what they were adding to the Dio. So that's the Gemara's question over here, is it the Gavel? Is it simply the oil being used to mix, to put a liquid into the ink? We saw before earlier that they used to mix the ink came in a dry form, and then you had to water it down, or you had to liquefy it, so you use the Shemen Zayit to do that. Or, are we talking about Lashen, which is the blackened substance that's added to Dio, is that involved with either the possibility it was using Shemen Zayit, you were burning Shemen Zayit to make that ash, or again, that you, when the ash is made, you also mix it with Shemen Zayit. Rashi brings down both. So that's the question here. Tashma, the Tanya Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra, Kol Shemanim Yafim L'Dio, V'Shemen Zayit Min HaMufkar, Ben L'Gavel, Ben L'Hashen, doesn't matter. Either way, Shemen Zayit is the best oil to use in any of these instances, whether it's to mix, to liquefy the ink, or to lashen, is to get that smoke, to get the ash from a fire burnt with olive oil. Shmuel Zarazutra Matni Hochi, Kol Hashanim Yafim L'Dio, all ash or all smoke is good for Dio, V'Shem Zayit Min HaMufkar. He says it explicitly with regards to lashen. Arvuna Kol Asrafim Yafim L'Dio, all gums are good for ink. Israf Kitaf Yafim Mikulam. And the balsam gum is the best of all of them. So sap or gum of the balsam tree is the best for the mixture in the Dio. There you go, the first thing. If you light Nerot Chanukah, you have to make a bracha. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Amar, Haru En Nerot Chanukah, Tzarich Levarech. Someone who sees Nerot Chanukah has to make a bracha. So this is an innovation in Nerot Chanukah. It's an amazing innovation. We'll have to discuss it, what the Rishonim say about that. We'll come back in 1 second to discuss this, but there seems to be two separate dinim here. There's a din of Hadlaka. You make a bracha on lighting Nerot Chanukah. And there seems to be another din, which is that if you see Nerot Chanukah, you have to make a bracha. The question, obviously, is what's the interplay between these two dinim? Are they two separate mitzvot? Or is one subsumed under the other? So now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yehuda, Yom Rishon, on the first day, Aru Em Mevarech Bet, Madlik Mevarech Gimel. One who sees Nerot Chanukah makes two brachot. Umadlik Mevarech Gimel. And someone who is doing the actual hadlaka neirot, he makes 3 brachot. Mikan ve'elech madlik mevarech shtayim. The one who lights makes 2 brachot. Ve'eh mevarech achat. And the one who sees it makes 1 bracha. So mamayit, which bracha is he leaving out? Mamayit zman. Leaves out shechianu. So on the subsequent days, why you drop 1 bracha is because on the first day you make shechianu. The subsequent days you don't make a shechianu. It says, v'nimot neis. Say, why don't you drop al anisim? So Gemara says here, Neis, koyomei ite. Neis, every day is a miracle, as Rashi explains over here. Obviously, this goes back to the question about why there are 8 days of Chanukah, not 7 days of Chanukah. Why is there a Neis on every day? So all those Torot that are said about it, here the Gemara says it almost explicitly, that each day was a Neis. As Rashi says that the Pach HaShemen, koyomei ite, shari kol shmona idliku mina pach. All 8 days were lit from that Pach HaShemen. It's not clear from Rashi whether that means that they put the whole Pach in the first day, and then it continued to light for the 8 days, or they meted out a portion of the oil from the Pach each day, and it continued to light for the entire time that it was supposed to light. You see here that there is a nes every day that we require al anisim. So my mevarech, what is the bracha? So we already saw this part of the bracha already, which is mevarech asher kiddishanu mitzvah David zivanu, ladlik ner shel chanukah, veheichan tzivanu. Where are we commanded to do this? Rav Avi Amar milot asur. There is a requirement not to violate or disregard the words of the chachamim. Rav Nechemia Amar, Rav Nechemia says, alavicha v'yagetcha zikeinecha v'yomru lach. So the idea that there is a Mesorah, that each one should ask those that came before them what the Mesorah is, and you must respect and heed the Mesorah. Beitiv Rav Amram. Rav Amram questions over here. Hadmai. When it comes to Dmai, Dmai is Tevel, where we're uncertain as to whether the Trumot Masorot were taken off. Produce of an Amaretz, where we're not certain if he took off Trumot Masorot. Ma'arvinbo u'mishtatvinbo. One can use it for an Eruv, here, whether it's an Eruv Chatzirot, whether it's an Eruv Tchumin, Umishatrin Bo, that's a Shituf Mivaot. You can use this food, these items, for that. Umivarchim Alav, and you can make a bracha on it. What bracha is meant by Mivarchim Alav is 2 opinions. Rashi says Hamotzi, but there are many that believe that it's Birkat Hamazon. Umizamnim Alav, and you can also make a Zim on it. Not only can you say Birkat Hamazon, you can make a Zim on it. Umafrishin Oto Arum, and you can separate it. When you take off the Trumat Masorot from the Demai, you can do it naked. Uben Hashmashot, and you can even do it Ben Hashmashot going into Shabbat, because it's all a Safek. All these things are a Safek. Because of the Safek, we allow you to go ahead and do these items. We're going to have to explain them. Let's understand that when you're talking about Tevel, that is Tevel Vadai, Mishnah and Brachot already told us, if you have Tevel Vadai, you cannot make a bracha on it. You cannot make a zimun on it, because it's Isur. And if you engage in Isur, you're not allowed to make a bracha. Then we say, but, Boseya Barach Neitz Hashem, that Hashem does not interested in a bracha that is done on something that is unpleasant, something that is disgusting, which is a violation of the Torah of Tevel. So if it's Vadei Tevel, none of this would be allowed. That's number one. Number two is in terms of making a bracha, we know that when it comes to something that's Vadei, we make a bracha. Something that's a Safek, we don't make a bracha. So here we have Demai, you're going to be Mafrish to Trumot to Masorot. We don't know if you're really Chayav. Do you make a bracha or do you not make a bracha? So when it's a Safek, in general, we don't make a bracha. The Gemara is going to discuss this in 1 second. The other thing we said here is that you can use it for an Eruv and Shituf Mivot. The reason for that is that the Chachamim said that Demai can be eaten by Aniyim, can be given to the Aniyim or to the Chayil, to the troops. There, Machlokah, whether it can be given to the Jewish troops or non-Jewish troops, but you can give Demai. Chachamim gave a dispensation within Demai for that. So then, One can technically make themselves into ani by being mafkir kol nechasav, by disowning anything that he has in his possession. By doing that, he'll become an ani and be permitted to eat the demai. So because of that, he can use it for eruv and shituf, because technically he could eat it without any problem, because he can make himself into an ani. So that's the rules here that we're working with in terms of demai. Gemara here wants to know, v'yamart kol mi derabanan bo'i brocho. If you say every din derabanan requires a brocha, we just said that before. Nerut Chanukah are clearly a din midrabanan. And we're saying, asher kedishan mistav vitzivan, we make a brocha on it. Hacha ki akai arum echa mevorech. If he's naked over here when he's mafrishit, he can't make a brocha. Va'beinan, we have a requirement, v'yom machanecha kadosh, v'leka. You have to keep your machanecha kadosh. Continuation of Pashalo Yerabacha Irvat Davar. And therefore, afilub dibur, that's got a shame, lo Yerabacha Irvat Davar. That even when you speak with the Shem Hashem, you can't be naked. You can't be mafrish. Shmuel to Masroh to make a bracha on when you're naked. So what's the obvious implication? You're not making a bracha over here. Why aren't you making a bracha? It's a din derabanan to be mafrish. Shmuel to Masroh to Masroh to midemai. So Rabbi, vaday midivrayem bayi bracha. This is what we said before. If something is a halacha, psuka, definitive halacha midrabanan, then you're going to make a bracha. Sofek didivrayem lo bayi bracha. When you have a safek, you're not going to make a bracha. So over here, the reason that the institution, the Rabbanan, is put in place is because of a safek, then you're not going to make a bracha on it. It's true right away, the Gemara asks the question, by Yom Tov Sheni, the safek did the Vrayimu. The whole reason of keeping Yom Tov Sheni is a safek mid Vrayim, because one day is Chol, one day is not Chol. And today, for sure, it's min agabotem v'yadayim, it's not all done mid Rabbanan, ubay bracha, and requires a bracha. So Gemara says, ha'tam ki echad lo lezuzului ba. That's done to protect against the zilzul and the Yom Tov. Imagine at Yom Tov Sheni you couldn't make any brachot. Everybody says it's really not Yom Tov Sheni anymore. So we make brachot in order to ensure the keeping of the character of the day. Rav Amar, interesting, Rav Amayaretz Masrinhein. Rav says that Rav Amayaretz are Masrinhein because the Rav take off Shemotu Masrot. That's the reason that we don't make a brachot. But Mikar Adin, Rava would believe that Safek Midrayim by Bracha. That Safek Midrayim does require a Bracha if they instituted it. I mean, not if you have a Safek Derabanan. But if the institution Derabanan is based on a Safek, you would make a Bracha. The only reason that we don't do it here is because Rava Me'aretz Masrimim. And Rashi says over here, Demai, Afilu Safek Lohavi, Elo Chumra Ba'alma. So Rashi says that Demai is not really a Safek, it's a Chumra Ba'alma because Rava Me'aretz are Masrimim. We discussed this back on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, and just point out that Tosfot views Demai a little differently than Rashi over here, which is that in Rov, you can have two types of Rov. You can have a Rov which is 51%, 60%, which is a just over the threshold. You can have a Rov that is, there are different ways to express it, which is something like a 90% Rov. So over here, Rashi seems to be indicating, and the way he's reading the Gemara is that Rov HaMeretz, Masrimim, it's like an 80-90% Rov. It's a very high Rov. And therefore, there's no reason to make a bracha because the institution is a very, very chumra ba'alma. It's not a real institution because you really didn't have to do it. The chachamim just wanted to make sure that we were all good. Tosafot back on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph says, why are we mafrish off of demai? Because he says, zamiyut hashchiach. Says, that's why we, when it comes to demai, we're mafrish. Shumot the masrov from it because it's not a real rov. It's like a 50% rov. So that's an interesting dynamic here between what Rashi is explaining here, what seems to be a super rove, and the Tosafot back there saying the whole reason we're mafrish is because it's not a super rove, it's a just over the threshold rove, and then it's a miyot hashchiach. It might be that Rashi is only saying this in Divrei Rova, and it's saying it in Divrei Rova, but he would agree with Tosafot when it's not. That's Rova's opinion, but everybody else believes that it's not a rove mukhlad like that, it's a lower form of rove. Right, that's important to understand. The two things that we have to address over here, which are very important. Number one is the issue of lotasur. And the issue of lotasur says that when you have a din derabanan, that means that I have a din d'oraita. And sure enough, the Rambam, when he brings this halacha, he codifies this halacha. It says, "Apia Torah sheyirucha v'mishpat sheyomru lecha taseh lotasur min hadavar sheyigidu lecha yaminu small." You have to listen to the chachamim. So the Rambam, in his Sefer HaMitzvot in Shorish Aleph, this is the first thing he addresses. He's upset at the Geonim and others that counted in their Sefer HaMitzvot, Mitzvot Derabanan. Says there's no way you can count Mitzvot Derabanan as one of the 613 Mitzvot D'Oraita. It's not a Mitzvot D'Oraita. So he says, Ahirinu alav mipnei shatu barabim. There are many people who made a mistake. Umanu ner chanukah mikum regila b'chlal Mitzvot Aseh. They put those in as part of the count of Mitzvot Aseh, the 613 Mitzvot. He says, those are not Mitzvot D'Oraita. You can't count them. Umashir ali shehiviam elzeh. What caused people to do this? Hayotanu, Mivrachim al yelud vrim asher kedishanu mitzav detzivanu al mikra megila. Well, hadigner the gemara talel. We make a bracha asher kedishanu mitzav detzivanu. That's what caused them to make this detzivanu. Sounds like there's a mitzvah to do this, and that's the case. V'she'ilata tamut, and the Gemara's question, Shabbat Chav Gimel, he's quoting our Gemara, Heichan Sivanu, Bamru Milo Tasur, V'imitam Zem Manu Otam, Hinei Ra'ui, Shimnu Kol Devar Shumi Derabanan. If that's the case, you should count every mitzvah Derabanan. Kol Mash Ramru Chachamim L'Soto, anything the Chachamim say, V'chol Mash Yizhiru Mimenu, anything they warn you of, Kvar Tziva Moshe Rabbeinu B'Sinai. Shitzivanu L'Kaimo, Moshe Rabbeinu said, you have to keep it. And he quotes the pasuk of Lotasur. So the Rambam believes that every mitzvah derabanan is really a mitzvah doraita. Moshe was tzivat Sinai to listen to the chachamim, and therefore it is a mitzvah doraita. He disagrees and doesn't count them as mitzvah doraita, but he does agree that every mitzvah derabanan really in the end is under a mitzvah doraita of Lotasur. The Rambam in Hilchot Mamrim also brings down the same din. But the Ramban and his Aksogot on the Rambam are right away jumps on it and says, how could it be? Like Josh is saying, the issue is, what about a Sofek? Well, we know that there's a din. Sofek do right the Chumrah. Sofek do Rabbanan the Kula. If you really believe like the Rambam that every Sofek in the Rabbanan is really ends up being a Sofek do right because Lo Tasur. Every the Rabbanan really ends up being a do right. And if you have a Sofek, then it should be a Sofek do Rabbanan the Chumrah because it really turns out to be a Sofek. Doraita. But the Ramban is against this position of the Rambam. He says that you cannot be Megader, you cannot give a Din Derabana and claim that it's a Doraita, because then you run into this problem. He mentions other things that are issues with in terms of this explanation. So everybody has to explain. Oh, so that's very good. So that's what the Kovach Shurim asks. Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman asks exactly what Shoal is asking, which is, the Ramban in the end agrees that there's a mitzvah to listen to the Beit Din HaGadol, to listen to the Chachamim. So even the Ramban has to deal with the issue. One of the individuals to give the answer is the Meshech Chochma. The Meshech Chochma said that he felt obligated to defend the Rambam, even though he says, Ani Alfar Ve'efer Tachat Raglei HaRamban, but he really felt that there has to be something said. And so he says that Lo Tasur is a din in Begida. So Isur in rebelling against the Divrei Chachamim. Din is that you may not violate what the word of the Chachamim. What the word of the Chachamim is, that doesn't matter. So there are two separate issues. You have a mitzvah derabanan. The mitzvah derabanan inherently, that is a din derabanan. Nothing to do with the din d'oraita. There's a separate din that you must listen to the Chachamim, which is the din d'oraita. So when I look in encapsulation, if I look in just at the mitzvah itself, the mitzvah itself is a Safek Durabanan and a Safek Durabanan Le Kula. If I look at the question of Mered, Neged the Chachamim, that's a Din Doraita. So if I violate the mitzvah Durabanan, then I've rebelled against Divrei Chachamim, I violated the Doraita. But the mitzvah itself, everybody agrees, the mitzvah itself is a Din Durabanan. It's just a question of, if I don't listen to the Chachamim, what am I in violation of? Then I may not be in violation of a Durabana, I may be in violation to a Raita. So the Safek over here, it's clear when you're in a Safek, you're not being Moreit. You're not rebelling against the Chachamim. A Safek leads to a problem where I don't know what to do. When I don't want to do, I'm going to opt out of doing that. I'm going to go to Kula. When I Safek the Kula, it's not that I'm rebelling against the Chachamim. I have to make a decision, and that decision is to go to Kula. So that's the way the Meshech Chochma explains the Rambam. The Kovach Shurim, Rabbi Chanan Rossman, quotes from Rabbi Chaim, says, my Rebbe Rabbi Chaim says, and Rabbi Chaim says this in the Ramban, not in the Rambam, in the Ramban, that the Feish Gat Ramban, he namish in the Savinu b'sinimah l'shmo ha-divrei chachamim, v'avor al-divreim over al-tzivuy hazeh, v'ain b'hem isur mitzad atzman. L'dugma, shvut d'divreihem, ain b'hem mi d'oraita isur shabbat klal. Chein shniyo d'oraita. If you violate shvut d'rabanan, which is that there are isurim on Shabbat that you have to do mi d'rabanan, if you violate that, you're not in violation of Shabbat, you're in violation of Lo Tasur. He says that's the difference. It sounds almost identical to what the Meshech Chochma is suggesting in the Rambam. That's what Rabbi Chanan says in the Shame of the Ramban. Because he asks your question, which is, doesn't the Ramban have to deal with the fact that there is Lo Tasur? So he explains the Ramban that way. It's basically, in the greater sense, the difference between a Gavra and the Chepza. Which is that, when it comes to Mitzvah Doraita, they are a din in the chetzah. They're a din in the object itself. There's an objective reality to that object. For instance, chazir. You eat pig, the item is chazir. Now, if you have a suffix, you still have a suffix whether the item is chazir or not. You have to make a decision. So, mi doraita, this chetzah is chazir. we know for certain it's chazir and you can't eat it. If it's a safek, the safek still is whether this object is chazir or not. When it comes to a din de rabbanan, the din de rabbanan is imposed on the gavra, not on the chetza. The rabbanan said you may not eat this item. Is this item inherently isur? The answer is no. The item is not asur. The chachamim made you asur to eat this item. So then when you come to a safek to eat the item, if I look at the item, the safek, it's not a safek in the isur. The item itself doesn't have any safek in it. The item inherently is mutar. The only safek is about your relationship to that item. So in that case, the safek, we say, goes to kula, because the Rambanan didn't change the status of that, and the chepz itself remains mutar. The only question is, are you morate against the chachamim? That's a gavra issue. So when it's a safek, that's not called merit, that's not called not listening to the chachamim. So that's the way the Rabbi Chanan answers for the Ramban, that's the way the Meshachokim answers for the Rambam. Then the Rabbi Chanan also brings an additional answer. He wants to separate. He says, that when you're talking about a din de rabbanan, that's a different issue, a different item, almost completely separate. So therefore there's no connection to the isur deraita whatsoever. That what the chachamim say and do is not connected to the mitzvah of lo lavor al divrei chachamim. They're two independent issues. It's hard to understand what he's saying or how it's different from the previous answer. But then he brings down that others. He says, Uyashiv data Rambam katu achronim. Other people explain the Rambam. The kesvar nirle asher lo yeshu beinei Ramban, which clearly would not work for the Ramban. I know shukachit nu chachamim. Chachamim made this conditional. This is what Shaul was suggesting before. The Ramban said that he doesn't like this, he doesn't agree with this. But that's how they explained the Rambam, which is that when the Chachamim instituted their halachot, they only made it halacha when it's a vada. They didn't make it halacha when it's a safek. When you have a safek, then the halacha doesn't apply. Please then you read the safek the Rambam mutar betarte betorat vadai. That a safek the Rabbanan is not because it's a safek, it's mutar. A safek the Rabbanan is mutar vadai. Because the Chachamim never instituted their halacha there. That's how you'd have to express it for the Rambam. Those are different ways to deal with the Rambam and to deal with this halacha, but it comes out of our Gemara. This halacha comes directly out of our Gemara. That's number one. The second thing that we have to deal with is the issue of haro'eh. How does ro'eh, someone who sees Nerot Chanukah, have to deal with one who is madlik Nerot Chanukah? So what is the bracha? Basically, the question really is what's the bracha of Al HaNisim? Because that's the bracha that survives in both cases. The Hadlik Ner Shel Chanukah you can only make when you've lit the candles. Obviously, you can't make that bracha when you see the candles. So what does that mean? That Shalas HaNisim is also made when you light the candles, and it's also made when you are ro'eh, when you see the candles. So what's the interaction between them? If you know you're going to light later on that day, what does that mean in terms of Shalas HaNisim? You see candles on your way home. Should you make the bracha Shalas HaNisim? And then when you get home, you light and you make it without the bracha? Or knowing that you're going to light, you should put the two together. Right? That would be one question. The other question is, the bracha of Shalas HaNisim, is it really only connected to seeing candles? Or is it a din in the day of Chanukah, equivalent to Zman, Shechiyanu, that we say on Yom Tov, which is that it's a birkat Zman, it's a bracha on the day itself, not a bracha on the Neirot. We just say Aro Neirot because that's the impetus for saying the bracha, but maybe it should be independent of anything. That it's a din in the Yom Chanukah, not a din in Neirot Chanukah. So that's another possibility. The way it's written up in Masechet Ketanot, Masechet Sofrim. In Masechet Sofrim, when it quotes Allah, it says, a Madlik Omer, person who lights a candle, Madlik Reish, Tzivano Adlik Ner Shel Chanukah, Umanev Omer. And then he continues, Haneirot Halalu Anu Madikim. Then, afterwards, then he says, Shechiyanu and Shas Anisim. So the way the Masechet Sofrim lays it out is, there's Adlik Ner Shel Chanukah, then there's Haneirot Halalu, then only afterwards you make a bracha Shas Anisim and Shechiyanu. Very interesting. Right? Then it says, Ro'eh. Right? Then the Ro'eh makes the bracha. That's when it brings in the din of Ro'eh. In Shotot Rav Achai, when he quotes the Halacha, he says, V'kad mate yom v'ditrachish lu nisa l'Yisrael, when the day that has a miracle that happened to Klai Yisrael comes around, go on Chanukah Purim, v'chayev v'bruchei baruch asher asa nisim l'avotenu b'zman hazeh. V'chayev make a bracha v'sher asa nisim. Chanukah ashraga. On Chanukah you do it on the candle. But you see that the impetus, based on the shilto, what's the bracha? The bracha is on the yom shenasa bo nes. Happens to be that we connect it to Nerut Chanukah. But similar to Shechiyanu on Yom Tov. The Gemara in Eruvin says, first you can make Shechiyanu, Birkat Hazman in the Shuk. You walk into the Shuk as Yom Tov, you can make a Birkat Shechiyanu. Chachamim were kavuot to Alakos. They made it that the proper time to do it is Alakos, when you're making Kiddush, coming into the Yom, that's the proper placement of it. But not that you can't make it independently. That's almost what it sounds like from the Shilto. There's a din of Shas HaNisim on Chanukah. The Chachamim were koveya that you make it ala Neirot. But if you don't have the Neirot, it sounds like possibly you could make Shas HaNisim independent of that. So now we have Tosafot in Sukkah says Bishar mitzvot. We go on a lulav of Sukkah. Lo takino levrech l'roeh. They didn't make a bircha d'roeh. And with Gabi near Chanukah, only by near Chanukah. Why? Mishum chavivat anes. His first answer is Mishum chavivat anes. So if that's the case, then it really would be connected to Nerot Chanukah. Because there, the chavivat anes is really revolves around the Nerot themselves and the nes, pach ha-shemen, and they would really be connected not to the Yom, but really to the Nerot Chanukah. But then he says, brings a second answer. People don't have houses. And then they can't do the mitzvah. So there, Tosu makes it sound like it's a bracha that has nothing to do with Nerot Chanukah. It's a bracha of Asanisim, which is about the Yom Chanukah. Since they don't have a house, they're not going to light candles, and therefore they need to make a bracha of Asanisim. Then he ends and he says, I don't love this answer. Why? But Tam Rishon Necha is better to look tikshalei mezuzah. Otherwise, mezuzah probably be a problem. Because mezuzah is a chovet abayit, chovet adar, and if you don't have a house, you can't do mitzvah mezuzah. So why isn't there a bracha on a roi mezuzah? Tosfot says, because of that, I favor the first answer. But obviously you can differentiate, and that's part of the problem. Tosfot here clearly says that if you think that it's chovet adar, chovet abayit, again, this is that tension we saw before between whether the mitzvah is really a chovet abayit or a chovet gavra. The Rashba says, mistavra, v'shelo yidlik, v'lo yidliku ala b'toch beito. If he didn't light, he didn't light from his house, v'inu atid ladlik halayla. He's not going to light anytime this night. That's when he makes a bruch on a roeh. Halav hachi, ein tzarich levarech. Should not make the bruch on a roeh. V'lo matzina yotzei min mitzvah v'chozer mevrech ala riyah. Nobody says that you're doing this mitzvah, and then you make a bruch separately on the riyah. V'yesh miravuta. There were these chachamim, de pershut, af al pishim adiklin ala b'toch beito, tzarich levarech ala riyah. Shaul's question, exactly. They light for him at home, then he should just make bruch on a roeh wherever he is. V'ein lehem al mashis mochu. He says, they have no legs to stand on. There is no way that that is true. It can't be that the Birkat Ariyah is separate from Birkat HaAdlakah. If they made the Birkat HaLokah for you at home, you can't do Birkat Ariyah wherever you are. The only way you can make Birkat Ariyah, according to the Rashba, is if there's no Hadlakah in your life. Meaning that you're not going to light, nobody lit it for you, and you haven't lit yet. Otherwise, there's no way you can do Birkat Ariyah, according to the Rashba. Who's he referring to? He's referring to the Meiri. Listen to the Meiri. The Meiri says, "Aval im lo berech adayin bebeito, imenu atid leverech gon bebeit aviv, orech bebeit ushbizo, meverech." Then he makes a bracha. "V'im atid leverech adayin enu tzarech leverech b'riyato achshav." He knows he's going to do the bracha later, and he doesn't do it. Mikom akom, mishlo berech, imenu atid leverech, el shemadikin alav betoch beito, yesh protrim atom leverech, v'lo yireh lichein. Some people say if they light from at home, he doesn't have to make Birkat Ariyah. I don't think that's right. So Miri clearly says, he thinks that you have to make a Birkat Ariyah when they're lighting for you at home. Mishen lo ladlik, v'enu b'makom she'ef shar lo lirot. This is what I said before. If he can't light, and he's going to be in a place where he won't see any candles, miluim. This is exactly the question. People go out in miluim, they're out in the sadeh, they're not going to have a chance. They're not going to see lights. There's no way lighting at home. They're single men that are out. Then, yeshomrim, shemavreich latzmo, sha'asa nisim, v'shechianu belaila rishona. No candles, nothing. That's birkat hayom, birkat hazman. That's exactly what we were describing. But he's getting it from Masechet Sofrim, which is that it seems to be those brachot are independent of the lighting. So, b'chol leilot, u'badarim nirim. He says you can do the sha'asa nisim every night, and he thinks that's correct. So the Miri has two chidushim here, two tremendous chidushim. One is that you make Birkat Ariyah even though they're lighting for you at home. And number two is that Birkat Ariyah, which is not really Birkat Ariyah in the end, it's a bracha al hayom. We want to connect it to the candles. But if we don't connect to the candles, you still make the bracha shas and isim and shechiyanu. And that's the question that comes up. What happens on the second night of Chanukah? And the first night they didn't light, or they made a Birkat Ariyah on the first night. When they light on the second night, do they make a Shechianu? Because is it a different mitzvah? Is a loko separate from Riyah? If you made the Shechianu the first night, was that Shechianu enough to cover the loko on the second night, or is a loko a totally independent mitzvah? Again, it will relate to this. With loko, we break like the Rashba. We don't separate the Riyah from a loko. A loko is the governing body here. And only when there's no loko do we say Riyah. Mishu Brewer brings down the Yesh Poskim, the Sabre, Afil Yadesh Malik, and Allah Beito, came into Bat Swain and Malik. The guy mishtateif, and he doesn't join in with the balabait, that he does make a riyah, lo dodo anes, and rechashriyano, milkom makom eno kedai lasod kein lamaseh, the suffix brachot dakel. Says, not worth doing it, because it's a suffix brachot. You have the Rashba versus the Miri, it's a suffix brachot. Don't do it. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. And he brings the Sharet Zion exactly what he thinks the da'at of Miri is, that it's like birkat shechiyanu on Yom Tov, that it's birkat hazman on Yom Tov. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal quoted in the name of his father and then the name of his grandfather also, and this is what he thinks happened in Masechet Sofrim, that every madlik is also a roeh. When you light your own candles, you also see your candles. And that's exactly what's going on in Masechet Sofrim. Masechet Sofrim says, make the bracha ladlik ner shel Chanukah, then say aner talal, then you make birkat shasa nisim and shefianu. Why? Because now you're ro'eh your own candles. You see your own candles, and you're making a bracha as a ro'eh there, not as a madlik. So every madlik incorporates within it the ri'iyah. But first of all, that would explain why you don't make birkat ri'iyah separate from being madlik, because even as a madlik, you're also a ro'eh. And therefore you make the bracha as a birkat ro'eh. And he says that was the minhag in Brisk, he brings from his father, that what they used to do is they'd light, not on the first night, you can't do it, but after the first night, they'd light the first candle, say aneru talalo, and then they would make the bracha of alanisim and shechianu, and then light the other candles. Meaning that they, up to the eighth candle, meaning that you could make the bracha all the way up to the eighth candle. That was their practice, that they did that. Exactly. The method says, they would separate between birkat aloka and the birkat shasanisim. Now he connects it also to the fact that there are three mitzvot that are pesumei nisa, I mentioned this before, that are connected together, which is Nerot Chanukah, Arba Kosot, and Mikra Megillah. In all of these instances, there's a requirement of a sipur to explain the nes. By Mikra Megillah, it's Kriyat HaMegillah. In Arba Kosot, it's the Haggadah. What do you have by Nerot Chanukah? And he believes that's why Nerot Halalu is the explanation of the nes. And that's why it's important to say aneru talalo after you've lit the first candle and say aneru talalo to explain the nes. And then, before you light the other candles, you could say shasa nisim. Because in that context, that's when you can make the bracha. Right? It's a very interesting outcome of this. But that's to deal with the birkat haro'eh. Continuing the Gemara, Amar Avuna. Chatzer sheyesh lo bet p'tachim tzricha shtei nerot. A chatzer that has two doorways requires two candles. Now, Rashi, again, you have to know this. Rashi is going to read this. We said this is the third time we're going to have a machloket Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi clearly here believes that what's going on, Yechaser sheyesh lo bet p'tachim, sheyesh lo bayit bet p'tachim tuchim b'chatzer. Rashi reads that means that the house has two doorways into the chatzer. We're not talking about a chatzer that has doorways out to the Rishut Rabim, we're talking about a house that has into. Rashi always thinks you light outside the door of the house, not outside the chatzer. And then Tosafot always thinks we're talking about the chatzer. Tosafot back on Kafal of Omen Bet brought this as his ra'ayah, that we're talking about the chatzer. Because here, look, the Gemara says, we're talking about two doorways in the chatzer. That's, this is Tosafot's ra'ayah, that we're always talking about the doorway of the chatzer, and so Tosafot, the most important thing is Rishut HaRabim. You have to light in the Rishut HaRabim, whether that's the doorway of the chatzer, the doorway of the bayit, that's where you gotta be. So here, this machloket persists. Here, this is the third time we've seen that machloket. So your chatzer sheish lo bet p'tachim tzricha shtei nerot. Rabbi Amar lo amran, ela b'shnei ruchot. That's only true if it's on two directions, meaning you can't see both doorways on the same side. If they open up into the same side, again, according to Rashi, the house, both doors open into the chatzer on the same side, or according to Tosavot, the chatzer opens up into the Rishut HaRabim on the same side, you don't need it. My time. What's the reason? Ilay mishum chashto. If you think, because it's a problem of chashad, people think you didn't light Nerot Chanukah, then over here, chashto deman. What chashad are we talking about here? Ilay mechashto de alma. We're worried about people coming out of town. They come and they see a house here. What are they going to think? Rashi says, what are they going to think? That the house really is divided in half, and there are two families that live here. And one family is not letting the Nerot Chanukah. Even on one side, you have that problem, because they don't know how many people live here. They don't know anything about information here. If you're talking about the people of the city, then they know that one family here. You don't have to worry about it. They won't even need it from two sides because they know there's only one family living here. So they know if he lit on one side, that's why he didn't light on the other side. The Gemara says, it's because of the chashad of the people of the city, even though they know there's only one family in this house, that there's only one family in this chatzer, whatever it is, there's no reason to light in both places. But, what's the problem? There are times that they will see one entrance and not the other. And this will be their conclusion. Just like he didn't light on that side, he didn't light on this side. I mean, they don't say both doorways. So if it's on one side where they can see both doorways, there's no question. They can see the other one's lit, and then there's no more chashad. But it's on two different directions, then there's chashad, because maybe he'll pass by one doorway, not see the other one, and say, oh my gosh, this guy didn't light candles. We're not tempered to chashin and the chashad. How do we know that we worry about other people's suspicions? Let's just say, it's his problem. He wants to suspect, I know I did the mitzvah. There are four reasons why you have to leave peah at the end of the field. Number one, the Gemara will go through each of these. So because of stealing from an aniyim, because of leaving the aniyim idle, because of suspicions about the individual, mishum ba'at techaleh, which is the mitzvah peah. So the Gemara will ask about in a second, is lo techaleh p'chat tzadcha. You're not allowed to wipe out the edge of your field. So, mipnei gezla anim. What does it mean? You may not steal from the anim. Shalo yireh balabait shapnuya. You shouldn't see that there's a time where nobody's around. V'yomar lekrovo ani harizu peya. Says, come here.
You're my relative. I'm making this into payah right now. We know that when it comes to these types of matnot aniyim, the Baal HaBayit does not have a zchut netina. When it comes to Maiser Ani, when it comes to Chuvot HaMaasrot, the owner has the right to determine who he gives it to. When it comes to Payah, Leket, Shechuk, all those items, the owner has no determination of who gets it. So we don't want the owner making a decision that the Payah goes to his relative. He'll make it Payah whenever he feels like it. Because he can sneak it in when the other Aniyim are not around. So that's number one. So that's why we don't want Gezel Aniyim, because he'll make a decision about who it goes to. The Neem got to sit around all day and figure out when he's going to leave the payah from his field. He has a huge field to harvest. How are they going to know when? So they have to wait, and it's not worth it. They're going to waste their time waiting around. If they know it's the end of the field, they know to show up when it's towards the end. Maybe he would have left his payah earlier. He left it early on, and now it's gone, and people see him harvesting the field to its end, and they won't know that he already gave payah. So people are going to curse this guy who didn't give payah, but he gave it earlier. So here we made it that it's at the end of the field, so everybody knows when you give payah. It's not a question. And you may not. The whole reason here is you may not wipe out the end of your field. Wiping out means the end. So isn't the whole reason for all of this because it's the end of the field? So it's to get around the cheats. Because those that cheat, what are they going to say? They're going to say that we already left payah. We already did it. And they're not going to leave payah. They're going to come to the end of the field and clean it up. But if we leave payah at the end of the field, we'll always know whether they really left it or not. Because at the end of the field, we'll see whether they leave it. So those are the four reasons that we deal with payah. But what you see here is that in pnash chshad, that we worry about what other people are going to think when we make a decision to make payah at the end of the field. So that people won't think that you didn't give payah. So chashad is important, and you have to address it. Okay, so now Gemara continues. Amar Yitzchak bar Radif Amar Rav Huna. Ner sheish lo shnei piyot. If you have a lamp that has two mouths that exit it, two people can use that to light their Nerut Chanukah. Rashi says it's a case of a hajrin min a hajrin, where they each one light independently. This can count as two Chanukiyot, because the lamp has two mouths, and each wick is separate and independent. As Rashi says, there's a cover on the top which allows the oil to drip into the lamp, and then the two wicks are inserted into the lamp with their own mouths. So Amarova Mile Kara Shem. And if you fill up a bowl full of oil, they keep up tilot and you put wicks all around it, kafal of kli, if you turn a kli on top of it on the top, so that each wick is held in place and looks separate, then it's Olala Kama Bnei Adam. Then many people can use it as a Chanukiah. If he does not turn a kli upside down on it, then it becomes like a big bonfire. It doesn't even work for one, because all the wicks look like they are joined together in the middle. They're all going to come together. The wicks are going to move or shift, and they're going to all come together towards the middle. When you come up kli, you can keep the wicks separate and independent of each other. In that case, they can stand as nerot. But if the wicks are going to mix and float together and come together, then that's going to be considered a medura. So that's the idea of the lamp before. When it has two piyot, it has separate mouths that come out, the two wicks will never join each other because they're fixed in place by the mouth and the kisui and the cover on top of it. Then it can be a chanukiah for each independent person, and it's clear that there are two people lighting here because you can see the independence of the nerot that are there. Pshitali, simple to me, that ner beito, for ner Chanukah, ner beito adif. When it comes to ner beito, as Rashi explains here, ner beito is ner Shabbat. When it comes to ner Shabbat versus ner Chanukah, ner beito adif. The ner Shabbat trumps. Mishom shalom beito, because of shalom bayit. Shalom bayit trumps everything. Ner beito v'kiddush hayom. Comes a question between nerot Shabbat and kiddush Shabbat, wine for kiddush Shabbat. Ner beito adif. Ner trumps again, ner Shabbat trumps again, because of shalom beito, because of shalom bayit. So of course, the question is, what's the competition between the runners-up for second place? If Ner Shabbat trumps Kiddush Shabbat, and Ner Shabbat trumps Ner Chanukah, what's the din when it comes to Ner Chanukah versus Kiddush Hayom? That's what Rava says, Ner Chanukah but Kiddush Hayom Ma'u, what's the din? Kiddush Hayom Adif the Tadir, is Kiddush Hayom first because it's more frequent? Odomo Ner Chanukah Adif Mishum Pesumen Issa, because of the fact that it involves Pesumen Issa, Bato De Baye. After he asked the question, Hadar Pashto, he answered the question, Ner Chanukah Adif Mishum Pesumen Issa. Ner Chanukah comes first because Pesumen Issa. Pesumen Issa trumps over here. It's not enough to trump Shalom Bayit, but it is enough to trump Kiddush Hayom. Therefore, the hierarchy will be Nerot Shabbat because of Shalom Bayit, Nerot Chanukah because of Pesumen Issa, and then Kiddush Hayom, which is Tadir. So it'll be the hierarchy in terms of a person's affordability. If he can only buy one of those items or some of those items, that'll be the order in which he should purchase them. We'll come back to discuss Nerot Shabbat, one of the main sugyot about the reasons for lighting Nerot on Shabbat. Here it seems to be because of Shalom Bayit. We're going to see a Gemara later on that Nerot Shabbat Chubah. We'll defer the discussion about discussing why we light Nerot Shabbat till Daf Chaf Hei, where we get the other part of the sugyo about Nerot Shabbat. So Tosfot points out over here that the Gemara's conclusion that Nerot Chanukah get precedence because of Pirsume Nisach, Tosfot applies that to the Haftorah. When it falls out Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh Tevet, on Chanukah, then we have to lane for three different items. We obviously have to lane for the week, Shabbat. We have to lane for Rosh Chodesh, and we have to lane for Chanukah. Which one comes first? Do you lane for Rosh Chodesh first, or do you lane for Chanukah first? So Tosfot says over here that Ein Ochanami, according to the Gemara, here is talking about a choice between Pesume Nisa and Tadir. It's a choice between Pesume Nisa and Tadir. You would pick Pesume Nisa. But what happens if you can accomplish both? Which is what's going to happen on Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, Tevet, on Chanukah. We're going to lane both. We're going to lane for Chanukah and for Rosh Chodesh. Over there, Tosfot says, Tadir comes first. Because since we can accomplish both, Tadir will come first, and that's why we lane Rosh Chodesh as the seventh Aliyah. And that's why we lane Chanukah as the Maftir, because Rosh Chodesh gets precedence. That's one answer of Tosfot. Number two, maybe that's not true. Maybe even in the face of Tadir and Pesume Nisa would trump. Even if you can do both. But what is the bigger Pesume Nisa? The bigger Pesume Nisa is the Haftorah. So the Haftorah you want to make from Chanukah. The only way to make the Haftorah from Chanukah is to have the Maftir be from Chanukah. So the reason that we lane the Maftir, we lane Chanukah after Rosh Chodesh is not because Rosh Chodesh really takes precedence. It's because we want the Haftorah to be a Pesume Nisa. And therefore we make Maftir into Chanukah. But ain't Ochanami, if it was just a choice between Pesume Nisa and Tadir, Pesume Nisa would go first and Tadir would go second. So those are the two answers of Tosafot. One is that the Pesume Nisa is really in the Haftorah, and that's why we lay in Rosh Chodesh first and then Chanukah second in order to make the Haftorah for Chanukah. Or the answer is Ein Ochanami, that when it comes between Tadir and Pesume Nisa, Tadir comes first, and that's why we lay in Rosh Chodesh first, but that's because we can accomplish both. Our Gemara speaking made a case where you can't accomplish both, and there Pesume Nisa trumps. Amar Ravuna, Haragil Bener, Avilan Banim, Tamidei Chachamim. Someone who lights his candles on a regular basis, they will have banim, children that are tamidei chachamim. He's here as a mezuzah, someone who keeps the mitzvah mezuzah, zocher le dirah na'ah. He will get a beautiful house. As a tzitzit, one who keeps the mitzvah tzitzit, zocher le talit na'ah. Then he will get a beautiful talit. As a kiddush shayom, someone who's careful about kiddush shayom, zocher umemale garbei yayin, he'll have plenty of wine. So the question that's raised by the Rishonim here is, which ner are we talking about here? Rogil b'ner, having in banim, tamidei chachamim, the two possibilities. I said this again in the Gemara here, it's unclear many times, we're talking about ner Shabbat or ner Chanukah. So over here, Rashi says it's talking about both, ner Shabbat and ner Chanukah. There are Rishonim in each direction. There are some Rishonim that say it's all about Shabbat, some Rishonim that say it's about ner Chanukah. I wanted to suggest that there's a proof here that it's talking about ner Shabbat. Because if you look at each of the items in the list here, it says that the mitzvah, which is a chovah on the item, so for instance here by mezuzah. Mezuzah is a chovah adar. If you have a house, you have to put up a mezuzah. So someone who is makpid to do the mitzvah looks at the house as a hechsher mitzvah to put up mezuzah. So therefore, mezuzah is the ikar. Then he will get a beautiful home. The result or the reward for doing the mitzvah is the mitzvah itself. Because if makpid on the mitzvah of mezuzah, you get a bigger house which you put on a mezuzah on. That's true in all these items. Tzitzit. If you makpid the mitzvah of tzitzit, you get a bigger bag and you put tzitzit on. You have a beautiful bag and you put tzitzit on. It's true in each of these items, and the first one should be true too. Which is that Aragil bin Ner, having lain banim tamidei chachamim. There has to be a connection between the mitzvah and the reward. Which is that by Shabbat, the reason that you light Nerot Shabbat is for Shalom Bayit. And the reason that Shalom Bayit is the Nerot. Shalom Bayit is so that all the members of the household can see and interact properly. So then the reward is Banin Tamidei Chachamim. That you have more children and more children that are Tamidei Chachamim. So that's the idea of Shalom Bayit. And you could argue that it's talking about Mahadrin Min Mahadrin. And that if you have more children, then you'll be able to light more candles, because there will be more individuals in the house, and therefore there'll be more Nerot Chanukah. Although we know that the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, the core mitzvah, is Ner Ishu Beito, and therefore it may not necessarily be correlated. Unless you say that Aragil B'Ner here means that Aragil to do Ner Mahajin Min Mahajin. My brother-in-law wanted to suggest that it really has to do with Chanukah, because of the same reason that I argued it had to do with Shabbat, is it has to do with Ner Chanukah. Until now we discussed this tension between Nerot Chanukah being a Chuvat Agavra or Chuvat Adar, Chuvat Abayit. In the end, the truth is that it's neither. It's neither Chuvat Agavra nor Chuvat Abayit, and it's both. It's both Chuvat Agavra and Chuvat Abayit. It sits somewhere in between, and the way to express that is that it's really a Chuvat HaMishpacha. It's a Chuvah, an obligation of the family to ensure that the house has a candle lit by it. And this is also echoed in a tshuva by Rav Shlomo Zalman, says something of a similar sort, similar nature. If nobody's at home, if nobody lives in the house, it's an unoccupied house, it's clear that you don't have to light candles there. So that can't be a chovat adar. On the other hand, it can't be a chovat agavra, because we saw before in Achsanai, when a husband's away and his wife lights for him, that he doesn't have to light. So it can't be a chovat agavra. There it sounds more like a chovat abayit. The answer, truthfully, is that it's a chovat hamishpacha. It's an obligation on the entire family to ensure that there are candles lit in their house, where they reside. The example that my brother-in-law brings is from the din of Yibum. But the din of Yibum, if there are multiple brothers that can perform the Yibum here, and one of the brothers goes ahead and marries the woman and accomplishes the mitzvah of Yibum, then the Gemara terms it as Iu Shlichuta De'achim Ka'avid. He is the representative or the emissary of all of the brothers. So over there, when the first brother died and the surviving brothers are obligated in Yibum, the obligation devolves upon all of them equally. They're all obligated to perform the mitzvah of Yibum. As long as one of them does it, he can discharge the obligation on behalf of all of them. So it's what's called a collective chiyuv. There's a collective obligation to ensure that this brother's wife has Yibum performed with her. As soon as one of the brothers does it, all the other brothers have accomplished that mitzvah because it's a collective mitzvah on them. So my brother wants to suggest it's the same thing by Nerut Chanukah. The obligations on the household, on the mishpacha, to ensure that the candles are lit in the house. That can be discharged by any person in the household. So yes, it's a chovat abayit, but it's a chovat that the mishpacha, that the family, a collective obligation on the family to ensure that the candles are lit in their residence. And so therefore it's both a chovat agavra, a gavra in the sense that it's a collective obligation on all the individuals of the household to ensure that it's lit in their house. And that's why when the husband's away and the wife lights it, then the wife has discharged the collective obligation of the family. And Rosh Shlomo Zalman in his Tshuvot also expresses it in a similar manner by saying this. They're with the light of the balabayit. Not because he's their emissary. The obligation is just on one of the household. And the others are discharged automatically. Even if the man and woman is in another country. And Chanukah hasn't come in. This is this question that I raised before. What happens if the husband is in America and the wife is lighting here? When she lights candles here, he's not obligated in the lighting yet. Okay, Mishar Yamim, Afkam Shaboka, even Zman Shetzlo, Adain, who Boker, it's still morning by him. Gamke, Mikayim, the mitzvah, Yotzimi, Dechobatam, Alkash, Obayi. There's still Yotze, the mitzvah, and the bayit, because it's an obligation on the family to ensure that there's something lit in their house. When the wife discharges that obligation, the husband, Elz Patur. The obligation's on the household as a whole, and any person who discharges the obligation then frees the others from that obligation. That's what's called Chobat HaMishpacha. Now bringing it back to our Gemara over here, therefore, Ragil Maner, Abilin Banim Tamir Chachamim, is exactly this. A person who is Makbid in Ner Chanukah is a mitzvah mishpacha. It's a mitzvah mishpacha, Abilin Banim Tamir Chachamim. Then you're rewarded with a greater or bigger mishpacha. So the same reason that I thought that was a rayo that it should be for Shalom Bayit and a mitzvah of Ner Chanukah Ner Shabbat, the Brolan suggests that it's also for Ner Chanukah because Ner Chanukah does focus on the mishpacha. Nagra used to pass by on a regular basis, the house of Rabbi Avin the carpenter. He saw that he had many lights, many candles there. Tosafot over here says, Perish, Abal Vaisha. The husband and the wife had them. Now it seems to be there that they're talking about Nerot Shabbat over here, but although again it's not clear whether they're talking about Nerot Shabbat or Nerot Chanukah. Here it sounds more like it's Nerot Shabbat, because it sounds it happened on a regular basis that he passed by there, which would also indicate that the Nerot that we started at the beginning of the Suvio, that Rabbi Baner is talking about Nerot Shabbat. Amar Trey Gravre Ravrave Nafke Mehoch. He says two great people are going to come out of here. I would suggest in Tosafot that because the husband and wife lit, therefore they would have two Talmid Chachamim. Nafke Minayu Rav Yidi Ba'Avin Rav Chaya Ba'Avin. Used to pass by the house of Ben Nasho. Ben Nasho, Rashi brings two interpretations down, whether that's his father's house or Chamiv, his father-in-law's house, from the word Nisuin. When the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that it's talking about the house of his father who had already passed away, of Rav Shizvi, is either its father, father-in-law, his father that had passed away, or his father-in-law. Chazad Avraga Bushragi Tuvoi, so they lit many candles there. Gavarabba Nofik Ma'ocha, he says a great person is going to come from here. Nachaminai Rav Shizvi. Rav Shizvi was the one that came out. The bitu the Rav Yosef Abma Akra Madlekadla. Where the wife of Rav Yosef used to delay in lighting the candles. Amala Rav Yosef. Tanya, we have a brighter law, Yomish, Amuda Anan Yomam, Amuda Esh Laila. In the Midbar, when Hashem provided the Anan for the Bnei Israel and the Amuda Esh for Bnei Israel, it says that, was there never a time where none of them were there? Vlamej, Amuda Anan Mashlim Amuda Esh. That means that the Amuda Anan would come before the Amuda Esh left. Vlamej, Mashlim Amuda Anan. And the Amuda Esh would come at night before the Anan left. So therefore, what he's indicating is that it's clear that the Amuda Esh, which represents the fire or the light of night, came while it was still daytime. So over here, you shouldn't be lighting so late in the day. You should be lighting when it's still daytime, just like by in the Midbar. Hashem brought the Esh for the light at night before the day was over. So then, Savra Lakduma, she wanted to make it earlier, very early. If that's the case, let's light much earlier in the day. You can't make it too early, and you can't make it too late. I mean, that's just at the right time. Can't be too early in the day, because when you light it by Ol Yom Gadol, it's not clear that you're doing it the cover the Shabbat. That's what Rashi says. It's Ein Minkur Rashi Shabbat. It's not clear that you're doing it L'Shem Shabbat. Can't do it too late, because you run into problems of Shkia, you run into problems of Shabbat. You also run into problems that it seems like the Nair should be already ready before the day ends, like it was by the Eish in the Midbar before the Anan left. That all assumes that we're talking about here the issue of Adlaka Neirot Shabbat. You're arguing that this time at Adlaka Neirot Chanukah, then the meaning would be that you have to do it before it's dark out, because that's a clear indication that you're lighting the lights not for your own use or for light, you're lighting them specifically for Neirot Chanukah. But if you light them too early in the day, they have no meaning, they have no shaykhut to the night, and therefore they're not connected to Neirot Chanukah. So you could argue that this sugi is talking about whether it's talking about Neirot Chanukah or Neirot Shabbat, that it has meaning. Amarava. Drachim Rabbanon Avalei Bnin Rabbanon. Someone who loves Rabbanon will have children that are Rabbanon. Demokir Rabbanon. Someone who gives kavod to Rabbanon Avalei Chat Nevata Rabbanon. Someone who gives kavod, gives respect to the Chachamim, he will have son-in-laws that are Rabbanon. The Dachamir Rabbanon, someone who has fears, has awe of the Chachamim, who gofe avitzumir Rabbanon. He himself will become a tzumir Rabbanon. Vila Barhochi, who? If he's not capable, or he doesn't learn so much, so he won't be a Tzubid Rabbanan, Mishtaman Mile Ketzubid Rabbanan. His words will be heard like that of a Tzubid Rabbanan, that people will listen to him and pay heed to him. Now the Gra does change around the Girsa here and says that it should be that Dachil Mide Rabbanan, the one who fears Rabbanan, has son-in-laws that are Rabbanan, and the Boker, the one who gives Kavod to Rabbanan, he himself will be a Rabbanan. So now the Gemara continues from the Mishnah, Velo b'shem and Tzreifa. One may not light with Shem and Tzreifa. My Shem and Tzreifa. What is Shem and Tzreifa? Amar Rabba, Shem and Shel Trumah Shenitme'ah. It's Trumah that becomes Tmei'ah. Trumah Tmei'ah must be burnt, must be used up. Now, there is a din when you burn up the Shem and Trumah, you can get Hanah from it, you can get benefit from it. So my Karole Shem and Tzreifa. Why are they called Shem and Tzreifa if it's Shem and Trumah Tmei'ah? Hold the Tzreifa, Omeit. Because it has to be burnt. You have to get rid of it so people won't come to a takala to use it, to eat it, because it's asur to be eaten because it's tmeah. And when you light it, you can get the benefit of its light. B'shabbat my time alone, so why can't you use it for Neirot Shabbat? If you're allowed to get benefit, allowed to let light from it, why can't you use it for Neirot Shabbat? Mitoch shemitzvah alav levarog zera shemiyateh. Because since it's a mitzvah for him to burn it up to make sure there's no takala, then mishemiyateh, maybe he'll tip it to ensure that it's burnt out completely. That's the case, and in Yom Tov you should be able to use Shem and Tzreifa. The problem here is Shem Yateh is not a problem in Yom Tov. You should be able to burn Shem and Tzreifa for your candles on Yom Tov. So Alama Tznan, we have a Mishnah, Ema Lekim Shem and Tzreifa be Yom Tov. It's explicit, you can't use Shem and Tzreifa not only on Shabbat, you can't use it on Yom Tov. Zera Yom Tov, Atu Shabbat. The answer is that it's Yom Tov Atu Shabbat. Ain't Ochanami on Yom Tov, it would have been Mutar. Just a Gzeira on Yom Tov so that people don't use it on Shabbat as well. Rav Chisda Amar, L'Shemiyateh Lo Yechashinan. Rav Chisda says, no, that's not the whole reason here. The reason here is not Shemiyateh, maybe he'll come to tilt it. What's the reason? Elohoch B'Yom Tov Shechal Yot Erev Shabbat Askinan. Yom Tov falls out on Erev Shabbat. The Fish Ain't Sofim Kodshim B'Yom Tov. Because you cannot burn Kodshim on Yom Tov. There's a restriction against burning Kodshim on Yom Tov, because that's not Tzorach Ochel Nefesh. Therefore, you may not burn kodoshim on Yom Tov itself. And here, Truma has a din in kodoshim, so Truma Tmeya, you may not burn on Yom Tov. That's talking about Yom Tov. Michal Dereisha, that's talking about Shabbat. Is la b'yom tov askin? We're not talking about erev Shabbat that falls on a yom tov. Then it's both cases are the same thing. It's a din in yom tov. So mechini misura matam kamar. It's really explaining the ratio. Matam eiv adikim b'shem tzeiv b'yom tov. Why can't you light on yom tov b'shem tzeiv? V'shein tzorfim kodeshim b'yom tov. Because you cannot burn kodeshim b'yom tov. So the reason that we don't allow you to light b'shem tzeiv is because sometimes yom tov will fall on erev Shabbat, and then you won't be able to burn them on that day because it's isur of burning Kodshim on Yom Tov, and that's the second Mishnah. The first Mishnah is telling us, don't do it on Erev Shabbat, that is Yom Tov. Why not? Because the second Mishnah, you're not allowed to light on Yom Tov at all, Shem and Shreifa, because it's burning Kodshim on Yom Tov, which is restricted. Tanya Kavot, Rav Chisda, Rav Breita, that supports the understanding of Rav Chisda and this Gemara. Kolelu Shamroin, Malakim Ben B'Shabbat, Malakim Ben B'Yom Tov. Anything that it says here, you can't light with them on Shabbat, you're allowed to light with them on Yom Tov, because the Chashash of Shem Yateh does not apply to Yom Tov. Chutz Shema Yateh doesn't apply to Yom Tov, or if we're worried about extinguishing, that doesn't apply to Yom Tov, because you can have other candles, you can relight the fire. You have ways to deal with it on Yom Tov. On Shabbat, you don't have ways to deal with it. Chutz, the exception that is with Shem and Sreifa, Shem Sofim Kodshim be Yom Tov. Shem and Sreifa, just like it's a surah on Shabbat, it's a surah to be used on Yom Tov, because you're not allowed to burn Kodshim on Yom Tov, which supports the understanding of Rechista. Okay, we'll stop over here.